Good morning, everyone. Good morning and welcome. We're going to go ahead and get started. And my name is Chuki, and I will be leading us this morning. For anyone who would like to join me in prostrations, we'll do that now, but don't feel any sense of obligation. You definitely don't have to join in, but if you want to prostrate, now's the time.
Okay, we'll start with our prayers on page 34 in the gold prayer book. And in the white binder, it's the first page of text. And we'll start with the Shakyamuni Buddha mantra three times. Chaya cha mune mune maha munaye soha. Chaya cha mune mune maha munaye soha. Chaya cha mune mune maha munaye soha. And now the Medicine Buddha stanza. Bhagawan, with equal compassion for all, whose name, when merely heard, dispels the suffering of the lower realms, dispeller of disease in the three poisons, I prostrate to Medicine Buddha, lapis light. And we'll say the mantra seven times. Jaya cha om beckon say, beckon say, maha beckon say, beckon say, raja samud gate soha. Jaya cha om beckon say, beckon say, maha beckon say, beckon say, raja samud gate soha. Jaya cha om beckon say, beckon say, maha beckon say, beckon say, raja samud gate soha. Jaya cha om beckon say, beckon say, maha beckon say, beckon say, raja samud gate soha. Jaya cha om beckon say, beckon say, maha beckon say, beckon say, raja samud gate soha. Jaya cha om beckon say, beckon say, maha beckon say, beckon say, raja samud gate soha. Jaya cha om beckon say, beckon say, maha beckon say, beckon say, raja samud gate soha. Now we have the four immeasurables, and let's say that twice in English, and then we'll chant it once in Tibetan. And we repeat this to give us a chance to really think about what the meanings, the words mean. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And then the chanting version is at the bottom of page 37. Sem chen tam che de wa dang de wei kyu jang ten pa kyu chi tu ngao tang du ngao gi you dong draw what you cheat do now may pay day Say Chen Rezig's mantra 8 times and Green Tara's mantra 7 times. Chen Rezig is a Buddha of compassion, and Tara is a female Buddha of enlightened activity. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re Soha. 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 Okay, the children can go to their classes now.
So good morning. So one of the things that the teachings say is that it's really important to sort of bookend activities with an intention beforehand and a dedication afterwards. So we've been starting to do that more, more markedly maybe on Sundays with a meditation in the beginning. I'm going to not do that this morning, but have us think for just a minute, like, why did we come here? You know, what's our intention for coming this morning? And we can really rejoice that from the moment we decided to come, we started the buildup of the positive potential, the merit that we make when we do positive actions. So we can just really rejoice that we chose to come here, and then we actually made it. And it's really amazing that we even have a place to come together, and it's literally because of every single person in this room. Even if it's your first time here, all of us come together to make this happen. So whether you founded the center or whether it's your first time here, we all come together to make this happen. So we can really rejoice about that. And then we can rejoice that we've got these authentic teachings that come from our two resident Geshe's, because Lama Zopa Rinpoche, our spiritual director, had asked them to come, and now we have them here. And so many reasons why it's really amazing that we're here, and we can rejoice about that. So for whatever your reason is for spending this next hour and a half together, just take a moment to think about that. Okay, so that was setting an intention. And so many of you will be familiar with the 9-round breathing, but for those of you who don't, I'll take about 2 sentences to explain. And if you have any questions afterwards, feel free to come and ask me or Donna, who led the prayers, or Kondola, or anyone who looks like they might know what they're doing. So you start using your left ring finger, and you block your left nostril. And you'll inhale through the right
And then you switch over so you exhale through the left. And we do that three times, and that's the first three of these nine rounds. Then we'll switch and use the ring finger on the right hand and block the right nostril. Inhale through the left. Then switch over and exhale through the right. Do that three times. Now we're two-thirds of the way there. And then you inhale through both nostrils and exhale through both, and that makes the final nine. So we'll do it much more slowly. We want to do it, you know, not so it's painful, but a little, with a little bit of intention. And we do this to help sort of eliminate imbalanced energy, wasteful energy that's collected. We talk about in our channels when the Tibetans talk about it. So this just sort of helps clear things out. So we can all do that together, starting again, left ring finger on the left nostril, and we'll inhale and do the first three like that. And then when you finish three, switch hands and use the ring finger on the right hand to block the right nostril and inhale through the left. And then both nostrils together. Inhale and exhale. Okay, fantastic. So if y'all wouldn't mind, just take 1 minute and introduce yourself to your name. Such enthusiasm, I love it. So, I'm sorry that Geshe-la isn't here today and that y'all get me, but what I was hoping to spend our time on today was to sort of review and look at what Geshe-la has been teaching the last few weeks. So he's been teaching on a topic called Lojong, which is mind training. And he's been teaching from a particular text called the 7-Point Mind Training. So I'm certainly no expert on this. I know very little. I'm just going to do my best to sort of repeat what I've heard Geshe-la say. Probably have even less experience than knowledge, but we'll get through it together. So the goal of Lojong is training the mind to awaken bodhicitta. And bodhicitta is the mind that seeks enlightenment for the benefit of all living beings. So Geshe-la often calls bodhicitta an altruistic attitude. And Geshe-la has quoted, and many have quoted, Robert Thurman, who uses the term enlightened self-interest. So this is kind of the idea of bodhicitta. And Geshe-la said that Pempe Sampa, which is Tibetan for the mind that wants to benefit, that is just so important. And that this mind that wants to benefit is the source of all of our happiness. So the teachings talk about how bodhicitta is needed to develop our own everlasting happiness. So when we talk about the practices of Lojong, there are two main practices. There's one called equalizing and exchanging self and others. And then there's Tonglen, which is the taking and giving meditation. And these Lojong instructions came down from Shakyamuni Buddha, or back there, And they were passed to Manjushri, and from Manjushri to Shantideva. Geshe-la talks a lot about Shantideva in the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. Then they went through several teachers to Lama Sirlingpa, who taught them to Atisha, who's represented here. And then Atisha passed them down to his main disciple, and then an unbroken lineage went through several masters to Geshe Chekwa, who's the one who wrote this text that Geshe-la's been teaching from. So when we talk about how to develop bodhicitta, there's sort of two main practices. There's the one that I just mentioned, the equalizing and exchanging self and others. And there's a second one called the sevenfold cause and effect, or sometimes they call it the six causes and one result. And these are taught separately because they come from different lineages, but when we actually are trying to put them into practice, you can combine them. So Geshe-la said, if you ever wondered how to develop bodhicitta, this is the true instruction. So this is how every Buddha, every realized being in the past, working on it now, in the future, will become Buddhas. So I'd like to spend some time today looking at these three different practices, the equalizing and exchanging self with others, the sevenfold cause and effect, and the Tonglen practice. So we'll do just a little snippet from each of those to sort of get our feet wet and see what it means to think about these things. We'll look at some of what Geshe-la has taught on these that go along with the Lojong teachings, and also I've got a couple of quotes I'm going to share from this book by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, The Art of Happiness. So these will be our resources, Geshe-la and His Holiness. So let's start first with the sevenfold cause and effect instructions. So these seven topics are preceded. It's just kind of assumed even before you get to the first of the seven that you'll be working on equanimity. And so we did the four immeasurable prayer three times this morning, and that fourth point was developing equanimity. When we say the prayer, Geshe-la has told us that equanimity comes at the end, but when we're practicing, equanimity comes first. So this helps us not to be biased. So first there's equanimity, and then there are six causes in this sevenfold practice. So the first one is recognizing all beings as having been your mother. And Geshe-la has said that the point of that is really just recognizing a deeper connection between you and all other living beings. The second point is remembering their kindness, and the third is repaying that kindness. Then the fourth is great love, which means seeing beings as very, very dear. I forgot to mention that those first three, the recognizing all beings as having been your mother, remembering their kindness and repaying it, those three serve as the cause then for that fourth one, the great love. And then great love, that's the direct cause for number five. And number five is great compassion. Six is a superior intention. And what that means is an extraordinary compassion that takes responsibility for all beings. So Geshe-la says extraordinary compassion is sort of like saying, I'm not going to wait for somebody else to do it. I'm going to do it. So Donna might be intending to save all beings, but I'm going to do it. You know, great if she does it, but regardless of what Donna does, I'm going to do it. It's that kind of mind. So that's the extraordinary compassion, the superior intention. And then that serves, that superior intention is a direct cause for that final result, bodhicitta. So that's the seventh. So I thought to sort of do something practical to try to think about these things, we could do a short meditation on equanimity. I'm going to use this book. This is a very old cover. I've had this book for a long time. We have it in the bookstore, but it looks different. I should have maybe brought that in. But anyway, this book, How to Meditate, by Kathleen McDonald. She's been a nun for quite some time. She also goes by the name Sangye Kadro. So we're going to do a short meditation here from this book. And the general idea, whenever we're doing meditation, in case it's not something you're familiar with, there's, you know, a seven-point posture, and there's some things we could talk about all of that. But the main thing really is just to sort of have a straight back. So if you want to know more of the details, again, you can see any of us who have been around a while, but the main thing is just to sort of sit up straight as best you can, but to be comfortable about it. You can have your eyes open or closed as you prefer, and we'll take just a moment to go through this guided practice. So sit comfortably and generate the strong intention to do this meditation in order to develop perfect equanimity. Imagine in the space in front of you three people, someone you like, someone you dislike, and someone you feel indifferent to. Retain the images of your friend, enemy, and stranger throughout the meditation. So first focus on the friend. Allow your feelings for him or her to arise. Feel your conviction that this person is definitely friend. That is, a person who is good to you and satisfies your needs. Feel how you really want this person to be happy. Immerse yourself in your good feelings. Now turn to your enemy, the person you do not like and who is not kind to you, who does not satisfy your needs, who annoys you, makes you angry, maybe hurts you. Look carefully at this man or woman and carefully note your feelings. Now finally turn to the so-called stranger, this person you know a little, but whom you neither like nor dislike. Look carefully at the person and note your feelings of indifference. Now, recognize that the basis for your relationship to these three people is solely what they do or don't do for you at this point in time. Is this a sound basis? Given the Buddhist view that our minds are beginningless, it follows that everyone has been our friend, enemy, and stranger countless times before. So isn't it reasonable to be kind to your enemies now because they've been your friends before? Now return to your friend and imagine a situation that would cause the relationship to end. Imagine your friend turning against you. Feel the resentment and hurt, how you no longer feel warm, no longer wish him or her well. Where is your friend now? Recall that this person was not your friend before you were acquainted, and could very easily cease to be your friend now as you visualized. Realize that there is no sound reason for feeling kind and loving towards only the friend of this moment. Relationships changed in the past and will continue to change. Today's friend can become tomorrow's enemy. And now turn to the present enemy. Imagine a situation in which you could be drawn together, a common interest, a word of praise or kindness. Look carefully at the person and your feelings. Are you softening? You can learn to feel warmly towards your enemy. This has happened before and will happen again. Why hold so strongly to the conception that this is definitely enemy? And what of the stranger? Imagine how one act of kindness or anger from this person could immediately turn him or her into a friend or enemy. There is no inherent, definite stranger there, and no sound reason for your feelings of indifference. Remember that your present friend and enemy were strangers to you beforehand. This enemy could become friend or enemy now. Keep the three people clearly in front of you. Think about the fragile impermanence of these relationships. It's only your misconceived belief in the stability of them that holds your mind back from the possibility of change. Your friend, enemy, and stranger all want happiness as much as you. In this respect, everyone is equal. And everyone is equal in having the potential to develop their minds to the fullest and achieve ultimate clarity and compassion. The differences we see in people are superficial, based on our mistaken and narrow self-centered viewpoint. In fact, everyone is equal in deserving our care and compassion. None of this means that we should not discriminate. On a practical level, it is necessary. Naturally, we feel closer to some people and are wise to keep our distance from others. This is not a contradiction. The point of the meditation is to develop equal concern, equal regard for everyone, whether they help us or harm us at this point in time, and to see that our present discrimination is based on arbitrary, mistaken, and very changeable labels. So let's dedicate our positive energy and insight to the well-being and happiness of all. And then you can bring your focus back to the room. Yeah, so thanks everybody for joining in with that. So when we look at the world with equanimity, that might just seem like a huge leap from where we are now, right? And, you know, anything that we're practicing here shouldn't be just another way to beat ourselves up and or a way to be discouraged, right? That's not the point. So Geshe-la often encourages us to know that making progress just slowly, slowly, bit by bit, that's just absolutely something to rejoice about. If anything we talk about today feels discouraging, I'd encourage you to come and talk to me about it afterwards to see if we can switch that around, because that's never the point of these talks. So, can we really change? I mean, can we? I don't know. What do you think? I've got a quote from His Holiness the Dalai Lama that came from this book about that. His Holiness says, I believe that it is essential to appreciate our potential as human beings and recognize the importance of inner transformation. So he said, I believe that it is essential to appreciate our potential as human beings and recognize the importance of inner transformation. So to help us think about that for ourselves, I'd like to use a technique that I learned from Venerable Thubten Chodron, where I'll ask a question and we'll just sit quietly and have kind of an inner discussion and talk with ourselves about it and just sort of brainstorm on it for just, the, you know, 60 or 90 seconds. It'll be very short. And then I'll ask a second question and we can brainstorm, you know, to ourselves. And so I've just got a handful of questions like that that we'll go through. So just sort of we can sit quietly and think on these questions. So can we really change? So what about something in our mind, like how we see a coworker, politics, something like that? And what about changing a physical habit or a behavior, you know, like smoking or staying up later than you want or anything else that you can think of, a physical habit or behavior? And can we change our speech, like choosing to say fewer critical things to a roommate or a partner? What about our speech? And then the last question is, where do we get stuck when we try to change? Okay, so you can bring your focus back to the room. Yeah. So I know for me, I love a redemptive tale, my favorite kind. And I shared this story before, but there was a documentary that came out, I don't know, more than 5 years ago probably, called Erasing Hate. And it was about a former skinhead, and he'd gotten tattoos all over, I mean, his face and his hands, his neck, that said hate and all kinds of symbols and ways of expressing that. And he sort of changed his mind about all of that, but he had all, you know, he was this walking billboard for hate, and he was really struggling with what to do about it. He couldn't afford the $35,000 it was going to take for the 16 surgeries to, you know, remove the tattoos, and he had gotten so desperate he's at the point of he's going to pour acid on his face. And a friend of his got him somehow hooked up with the Southern Poverty Law Center. I think that's who it was. Yeah, the Southern Poverty Law Center. And they actually found a donor for him to have the surgeries. And they were extremely painful surgeries. And this documentary shows the whole process of going from, you know, all these things to removing them so that he no longer was this walking billboard. And so it's just sort of one quite graphic example of how we can change. And we probably all have our own versions of things that have been challenging and we found a way to do them. So that's worth rejoicing about. Okay, so now we're going to move on to the second point of these three that we're going to talk about today, the equalizing and exchanging self and others. So this is the main instruction in the Lojong teachings for generating bodhicitta, that altruistic attitude. And our teachers often talk about how nobody wants even the slightest suffering. Everybody wants happiness just like we do. And so in this practice, we really think about that there's no difference between myself and others. Now, of course, there are differences, body differences, you know, history differences. I mean, that's not what we're talking about. We're just talking about in this way of everybody wants happiness just like I do. Nobody wants to suffer just like I do. And we're all equal in that. You know, Geshe has often said, I don't deserve happiness more than someone else. I don't deserve to suffer more than someone else. We're all the same in that. So this practice has five main points. The first one is recognizing that self and others are the same, like we just talked about. Then the second is the disadvantages of cherishing oneself. The third is the advantages of cherishing others. The fourth is the actual thought of exchanging self with others. And then the last one is Tonglen, which is the taking and giving meditation. So what I thought I'd do is take these first four points and we'll do a meditation on that, and then we'll have the Tonglen one be a separate meditation. So this meditation actually came from Venerable Tendrin, one of the nuns who used to be here, who's on loan right now to a center in Florida where she's their resident teacher. And she actually modified one from Venerable Thubten Chodron. So that's the lineage of the meditation we're going to do. So again, just want to sit comfortably. And the first step is equalizing self with others. So there's no difference between myself and others. 24 hours a day, I'm trying to obtain happiness for myself and to avoid anything I don't like. Others are trying to do the same. Whatever they're doing, however they dress or act or speak, just like me, they're trying to be happy and avoid pain. Their happiness is no less important to them than mine is to me. And the suffering they experience hurts them the same way it hurts me. In this way, we are equal, and we all have the same right to happiness. When I think myself, this has a great importance in my mind. When I think others, others feel like it has much less weight, much less importance. This is how my self-centered mind relates to the world. But self and others is an arbitrary distinction. It depends upon which side you're looking at it from. This is me and that's you. But from your side, this is you and that's me. One difference between my happiness and the happiness of others is that I am only one person and others are many. And just like $1 is very little compared to millions of dollars, my happiness is quite small compared to the happiness of millions of others. So that's the first step, equalizing self and others. Now for step two, the shortcomings of the self-centered thought. Since waking up today, most of my thoughts and actions have been to benefit myself. I've sought happiness in what I chose to wear, what I ate or didn't eat for breakfast, and how I planned my day. Because I'm looking out for my welfare most, I am constantly at risk of conflict with others. Often I'm impatient with the people I see every day, or when I was driving or at the store, waiting for lunch. When things didn't go the way I wanted, I made things seem worse than they really are. I tend to exaggerate their importance because it has to do with me, my happiness. Cherishing my own happiness more than the happiness of others, I'm easily irritated, offended, or hurt. The slightest criticism becomes unbearable. Many times I feel let down. My exaggerated self-concern creates a barrier between myself and others. Being less sensitive to their needs than my own, I overlook the impact of my actions on them. I can really point the finger at the self-centeredness as the cause of my problems instead of feeling guilty or pointing the finger at the other person or at society at large. I need to identify the proper cause of the problem here. I and selfishness, are they the same thing? Are human beings inherently selfish? From a Buddhist viewpoint, no, I'm not inherently selfish. I'm selfish now because of familiarity, because of habit created over a long time. But this part of my mind, this attitude of putting myself above all others, is not an inherent part of me. And this is good news, because it means I can change it. I can remove it. Like the analogy of the wide open sky and clouds in the sky, the pure nature of my mind is wide, open, spacious, like the sky. And self-centeredness or selfishness are states of mind, like clouds obscuring the sky, the open spaciousness of the mind. So I have the pure nature of mind, and I'm covering it up, obscuring it with self-centeredness. They are not one and the same thing. The clouds and the sky aren't the same thing. The selfishness and the pure nature of the mind, the selfishness and the merely labeled I, they're not the same thing. Selfishness is not an inherent part of me, and when I lay blame on my selfishness for my problems, I'm not blaming myself, because I and selfishness are two different things. When I try to see the disadvantages of the self-centered mind and blaming it for the problems it causes me, I'm not blaming me. The self or the I is just a merely imputed label on the body and mind. It's not the same thing as the self-centeredness, which is just a cloud-like state of mind that's obscuring the pure nature of the mind. So that was the second point, the shortcomings of the self-centered thought. So now step three, the advantages of cherishing others. When I cherish others, they are happy. The very same kind of warmth or singing feeling in the heart that I get when other people are kind to me, I can generate in other people by cherishing them and taking care of them. When other people are happy, there is a harmonious environment that indirectly benefits me. Real peace comes about through an attitude that cherishes others, values them, wishes them well, and wishes good things for them. If I develop an attitude of kindness, then that means everybody in my whole family can relax, everybody I come in contact with can relax, because I will not harm them. I will only try to be helpful. If I walk into a room with a mind that is open, kind-hearted, then everybody just seems very nice and wonderful, and everyone is happy to see me. If I have this attitude that cherishes, respects, and cares about others, I'm going to be able to be happy wherever I am and whoever I'm with. By the virtue of the thought that cherishes others, I can enjoy being with the people I'm with. Harmonious relationships come from respecting others, cherishing them, and taking care of them. If I cherish others, I won't want to steal from them or lie to them or scream at them or make fun of them. If I cherish them, I stop the cause for having difficulties in all my relationships with others. When somebody asks me to help, and I really do not want to, my mind is totally miserable, and the other person senses this and feels lousy too. Cherishing others changes my attitude. Instead, when my help is needed, I can think, wow, this is an incredible opportunity to help another who wants to be happy just as much as I do. This is an incredible opportunity to create all this positive potential that's going to get me closer to enlightenment. It's an incredible opportunity to repay their kindness. When I cherish others, I create a lot of good karma because I act constructively. When I act kindly towards others, I enrich my own mind. All the happiness in the world comes from cherishing others. Cherishing others leads only to happiness, to the elimination of problems. Wealth, wonderful experiences, a good heart, liberation, enlightenment, all these come from the practice of cherishing others. So that was the third step, the advantages of cherishing others. And now step four, actually exchanging self with others. Bring to mind a problem you currently have in your life. Allow yourself to feel the discomfort of the problem. See if you can notice how your mind does not like the problem and wants to push it away to get rid of it. Now think, I'm not the only person experiencing a problem like this. There are many others. Think of other people who may be experiencing the same or a similar problem. You may actually know some people who have the same problem, or you can use your imagination to think of others around the world. Also, think of some people who have this problem to an even greater degree than yourself. Generate compassion, thinking, I understand and empathize with what they're experiencing. How wonderful it would be if all those people could be free from their suffering. Reverse the attitude that wants to push the problem away, thinking, I don't want this problem. Instead, willingly accept it, thinking, by my accepting and experiencing this problem, may all those other people be free from theirs. I will experience this problem on behalf of them. Imagine joyfully accepting problems so that others won't suffer, like a mother would for her only child. So that was the fourth point, actually exchanging self and others. So let's dedicate the merit of this meditation to the benefit of all beings. And when you're ready, you can bring your focus back to this room. Yeah, so that was a doozy, right? Yeah. Chris, do we need to pull down the screen? I have just a very short 3-minute video of His Holiness the Dalai Lama giving us some advice on these topics. So this comes from a talk His Holiness gave in May of 2012 in Austria, and the talk was entitled The Art of Happiness. And His Holiness is going to be talking a little bit about working with our minds.
Geistes vorhanden sind. So I think another sort of point. Real disturbance sort of emotions, not sensorial level. Sensorial causing that, but real sort of disturbed sort of emotions mainly come from mental level. So now, in order to achieve calm or happy life, calm mind is very essential. So since real source of disturbance come from mental level, so we have to deal with mental level. Now here, firstly, pay more attention about our inner values, inner world. I think quite sufficient now. External world, we have quite good knowledge. But inner world, even you see, within this skull, the small space, we exploring external space, but sometimes we not yet fully cover about our inner space here. It is important, useful, to think more about our mind, about our emotion itself. The other day I mentioned, once the emotion develop, then try to watch emotion by another sort of mind. Then it automatically, intensity of the negative emotion subsides. For example, when you feel strong anger, then try to look at anger or at mind. We can do that. We have that ability. Try to watch the mind which is dominated by anger. As soon as you watch that, the intensity of the anger reduces. So like that. So it's quite interesting to look inward about mind.
Okay. So thank you, Chris, for finding the alternate. Way to go. So I know sometimes it can be hard to understand the accent, so I'm going to just quickly review. So real disturbing emotions are not sensorial, but come from the mental level. And to achieve happiness, or to achieve a happy life, calm mind is essential. Pay more attention about inner values or our inner world. The external world knowledge, there's already enough information. It's quite sufficient, he said. But within our own skull, we've not yet fully covered our inner space. And in the video, he goes like this. it's useful to think more about our mind and emotions themselves. And once emotions develop, try to watch with another sort of mind. Then the intensity of the emotions can subside. And he's the example, with strong anger, try to watch the mind which is dominated by anger. So it's like another part of your mind is watching the part of your mind that's angry. And he said, as soon as you watch, the anger reduces. So I've got a couple of questions. His Holiness talks about disturbing emotions coming from the mental level, not the external. Does that make sense? What does that mean? Maybe we could pass the mic for just a minute on these.
Oh, somebody break the ice. Michael, do it.
I think it means simply that what happens to us doesn't really matter. What matters is how we respond to it.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good summary. We have control of the reaction, We don't always have control of what's happening out there. In fact, hardly ever do we have control of what's happening out there. Yeah. Okay, thanks. And then when we talk about, or when His Holiness talks about exploring our internal world within our own skull, was that clear to people what that means? Does anybody have a question about that? Okay. And, okay, I think in the interest of time then we'll just keep going. So Tonglen, the third of our three practices this morning. Geshe-la says that Tonglen practice is all about understanding the deep connections between ourselves and others on a deeper level. He says, we don't just have connections, we have deep connections. It goes as deep as it can go. So in Tibetan, Tong means send or give, and Len means take. So with this practice, we imagine taking problems out of compassion, and we imagine giving whatever's needed out of love. And because it can be challenging to think about these ideas, one way the teachings instruct is to start with yourself. So you can take your future problems, the problems of this afternoon, next week, like that. So sometimes this meditation is taught conjoined with the breath. So you send the positive things out on the exhale and you take the suffering on the in-breath. In this example, though, we're just going to use visualizations for the meditation we're going to do right now. So this one's much shorter than the others. It's just one page. but it's just, it will give us a little bit of a flavor. So this will be our final meditation for this morning. So one last time, just sit comfortably. This meditation came from Venerable Tsepel at Chenrezig Institute in Australia for the Discovering Buddhism class that they have there. Because exchanging ourselves with others is such a radical idea, the root text suggests that we begin by meditating on taking on our own suffering, taking upon ourselves whatever suffering we may experience during the latter part of the day. When we're willing to stay even a moment with our own uncomfortable feelings and experiences, we learn not to fear them. Then, when we see or hear of someone in distress, we're not reluctant at all to breathe in that person's suffering and send out relief. So let's see how we would start the Tonglen practice with ourselves, and then we can move on and imagine taking on the suffering of others. We start by cultivating compassion for ourselves, thinking how wonderful it would be to be free of suffering and all the causes of suffering. Thinking, may I be free. I shall cause myself to be free by doing the Tonglen practice. Then imagine as if you could breathe in all the suffering that you might experience today, in the form of thick, ropey black smoke. You can imagine the black smoke coming from space or from your own body. Imagine breathing this black smoke into your nostrils, taking it down into the heart area where it transforms into black light that dissolves into the self-cherishing habit residing at your heart, causing it to slightly diminish. So you breathe in all the sufferings that you might experience today in the form of black smoke. Imagine that smoke either from space or your body. Breathe it into your nostrils, taking it down into your heart area where it transforms into black light, and that dissolves it into the self-cherishing habit residing at your heart, causing it to diminish. Let's just try imagining that a couple more times on our own, taking in all the suffering you could possibly experience today. And if you have some comfort now with this visualization, you can imagine extending the practice to take on all the suffering you might experience tomorrow. Breathe it in through the nostrils as black smoke, seeing it damage the self-cherishing habit residing at the heart. And if you have some comfort with that, you can gradually extend the visualization to include all the suffering that you'll experience next month. You can breathe that in. And next year, breathe that in. Throughout the remainder of this life, breathe that in. All the suffering you'll ever experience, you can imagine breathing that in. And then we can practice switching to giving, which is done by mentally giving away whatever it is that we need, whatever will bring happiness. It could be such things as providing a very safe environment to live in, or our body could transform into a kind of rainfall that removes all of our suffering, or turns into good friends, or spiritual teachers. We could imagine that our possessions transform into whatever it is that we need, or whatever would bring us happiness. Food, drink, clothing, a new house, whatever it is. We can even imagine our virtues transforming, becoming whatever it is that we need to progress in our spiritual practice, which will naturally bring us happiness. And when we get to the point where we feel comfortable with the practice of taking on our own suffering, that's when we can begin to extend it towards people we feel close to, our family or friends, our partners or children, or to those experiencing problems similar to our own. And then with time, we can extend the practice towards people we feel neutral towards, and eventually even towards those we perceive as enemies. So this is a general idea of taking and giving. And we can dedicate any merit from this action for the benefit of all beings. And when we're ready, bring our thoughts back to this room. So we've covered a whole lot of ground here today, and I really appreciate everybody's participation. I wanted to give an opportunity if anybody had anything that came up for them that was strong, you know, positive or negative, anything that they want to share. If not, I'm not using it as a time filler. I've got plenty more material, but I just wanted to make sure if people had something that seemed really important they wanted to talk about that they could.
I just want to let you all know that I was suffering a lot, and I committed myself to Buddhism, and everything is so much better. Yeah, and it has really helped me deal with my suffering and the real concept of being inside yourself. I'm caught there. So, you know, looking at every I statement that I make, you know, how can that, coming from the I, how can that ever be beneficial? That's what I'm wondering. Because if you're looking to share your experience with others, is that ego speaking? Or is that, you know, that you're going to say that you honestly, you're sending it out there for anybody to learn from or appreciate? How do you look at that?
Yeah. So I think that's a great question, and I think that, of course, what it looks like from the outside, none of us can say, because it's what our intention is, right? So someone could seem like, wow, that guy's got such an ego, but I don't really know what's in his mind from his point of view. It might truly be free of ego, you know, and it's sharing. So I think that we have to be kind to ourselves and recognize we are where we are. And for myself, you know, I can speak for myself rather than someone else and say, I do things motivated by my self-grasping all the time, right? I mean, that's not the goal, but that's the reality, right? And so not to beat myself up about that and not to just layer on the suffering by saying, oh gosh, you know, I'm such a bad person or anything like that. It's so much habituation that has created that cherishing ourselves that any progress we make counter to that is really worth rejoicing, you know? So I think having a kindness with ourselves about being where we are and a kindness about any progress is a party, you know, worthy of a party. Like, that's really how we can make progress, because beating ourselves up is just practicing more. You know, low self-esteem is still self-grasping. It's just, I'm worse than everybody. So, you know, just having kindness to ourselves. I'm not sure if that really answers your question.
No, and it's interesting because I've never before been able to feel it, but now I can do it all the time. I can show myself loving compassion just like that. And it's amazing because I used to really not like myself. And I was judgmental. I was not compassionate towards myself. I did things to hurt myself. And that has all changed. By practices like thinking, I find this one very helpful. I found it yesterday. If you're having a problem, first of all, you've just constructed it, right? So how are you going to diffuse it? And I find it very helpful to imagine myself on my deathbed. Would it be important then? And poof, it's gone.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be important. You know, it may not be important for more than the next minute. You know, so, you know, it makes it easy for me to, you know, just let things go.
So it sounds like you've really found some practical tools that, you know, have been transformative. I just rejoice for that. Thank you for sharing it. Yeah.
I can share one little quick thing that just happened.
Yeah.
When I first met Buddhism in 2008 and started practicing really hard, everything was brand new, there was someone living with me that was related to the other person living with me, and it was the most difficult person in my entire life. And I thank goodness for Buddhism, because I never kind of went into the anger of it. I mean, I went into the anger, but not verbally. And this person just texted me because I was sneaking to check the time and said, I'm coming to Raleigh. Can we get together? So I miss you and beautiful things. So I thought, wow, you know, if it hadn't been for Buddhism and this Tonglen practice, I would have just been in that old habit of mind of how to deal with this person. So, you know, it's kind of cool that just happened. You said, can you change? Like, well, yeah. So that was really beautiful. Just thought I'd say thank you. Yes, I've offered that they could stay with me. But not for 8 months.
Yeah. Yeah, so a redemptive tale, my favorite kind. Yeah, in the back. Can you take the mic?
I'm a fairly new Buddhist. So last month, my best friend moved to London, which was like a really good thing for her. But, you know, for me, I was really suffering from a lot of loneliness. But today, I didn't realize I never really thought about that loneliness. I more so just, like, pushed it away. And thinking about it, I realized that, like, A, I should acknowledge that. And B, I'm not the only one who's, like, alone. Mm. And others suffer the same loneliness. So I'm alone, but I'm not alone in my loneliness. That kind of makes sense. And it kind of, like, alleviated that and made me think about it and, like, just accepting that and kind of discovering who I am by myself without her because we've been friends for so long. So it's just, like, my own internal, like, self and my own internal, like, confidence without her. That's it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, very, very well said. Yeah, we probably have time for one more, if there's one more.
Wanted to say that with change, I find that when I want to make a change or set a goal for myself, as we were doing in the meditation earlier, I notice that I will tend to take the path of least resistance when I'm confronted with the situation that I would like to change. So I fall back on habit, and I fall back on what's familiar, and it is the path of least resistance because it's been well worn by the actions I've taken before. And so to actually do something different, I find it's very helpful to change the structure that I'm in any way. If I can change it somehow, even in a small way, it's like going home a different way than you normally go home. A small change like that can help to nudge me off the path of least resistance.
Yeah, so by making a change in, say, a routine or something, you can get out of the well-worn groove of the habit. Yeah. Thank you, Kim. Yeah. Well, I want to thank everyone so much for your participation. And, you know, we can just think about what we've talked about today as just a little dive into practicing what Geshe has been teaching these past few weeks and will continue to teach because he's only a little bit into this text so far. So I appreciate those who shared, and I think for everyone, even those who didn't share, we all have our own redemptive tale, and inner transformation certainly is possible. We all hopefully have thought of some of those examples today. And that watching our own mind is one good way to look at our negative emotions and begin to work with them, getting some distance from the story behind them. And as Geshe-la so often reminds us, think something positive, think something good. So we can, you know, do the second part of this bookend, which will be our dedication prayers, but also we can just rejoice in whatever positive merit we've created just now in this hour and a half together. And as we make our way out into this week, you know, it's all just a grand experiment. So if anything was helpful or interesting that came up today in your ponderings, maybe try once or twice this week to apply it and just see what happens. So I like to end with this quote by His Holiness. So be kind whenever possible. It's always possible. So, thanks.
Okay, we'll say the dedication prayer from Master Shantideva on page 246 and 247 of the Gold Prayer Book, and it's on the back of the page that we used in the white notebook. Give you a minute to get there. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. And now turn to page 244, and we'll say the long life prayer for His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and then the long life prayer for Kenzo Rinpoche at the bottom of 245, and then back to 244 with the long life prayer for Lama Zopa Rinpoche. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatari, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama, ornament of the Yellow Hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And now seven recitations of Green Tara's mantra. Om Tare Tu Tare Ture Soha. 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 And now we pause for some special announcements. Denise will go first.
Okay. Yep, that's a good one. So, as a practical way to pay some attention to our inner world and think more positive thoughts, in the words of His Holiness and Geshe-la, we're beginning next week at 1:30, the first of our three workshops based on the Rhythm of Virtue. This is in our bookstore. And the one that's going to be happening next week is from 1:30 to 3:30. I'm inviting you to come participate with us. We're going to be talking about particular small physical motions that we can do as a way to keep our minds on more positive thoughts. When we did the interactive open house here, we had six different activities to try, and this was one of the most popular ones. If you were here that day, it was the one that Joey was leading, and it's a way to use some little motion that begins with just a little finger motion of any particular positive four-line verse. You can bring one, or we'll have some samples there, and it just starts out with a little infinity tracing, and then it gets to be just a little bit more whole body. So we'll have 2 hours together to explore that idea of practical way to get around to focusing more on the positive thoughts. Anybody have any questions about that? Okay.
So it's a little chilly out today. The fall is coming. I don't know if y'all have seen Sweater Weather. No laughs. Y'all don't watch YouTube. Right. Okay. What does that mean to us here at Kanapa Center? It means that we now have the annual appeal is starting. And just like NPR, just like muscular dystrophy, just like everybody else, we also have our annual appeal that we do. And I feel very fortunate that I'm the one that was chosen to be able to give the kickoff of this. My name is Sandy Carlson, for some of you that may not know me. And I've been very involved here at the center for a number of years now, and I wear several different hats. And today I'm here on behalf of Kadampa Center, its board of directors, and some of the group that has to do the not-so-fun things about trying to figure out different ways to make sure that our center is sustained and is here for the present and well into the future. And as I kind of look around, and you can see all of the different things that we have here in our center, and we've got our precious teachers, we've got our beautiful Sangha, we've got all of the prayer flags and the tankas and stuff, you kind of can see the tapestry that we create here at Kadampa Center. No, I'm not going to say. Now, I'm old enough that I know that song, okay? And I think you know, when I heard about, you know, Jill's plan to kind of make this theme the What Is Your Color, and she talked to me about the idea of using the tapestry, and I really started trying to think about, you know, what does that actually mean to us? And, Chigula, you actually started it with this whole interdependence this morning, and it was like, and I was trying to write things down, and then I realized I couldn't write fast enough. But the interdependence of how all of the different things that we do really true do weave together here to allow us to create that support for Kadampa Center. And it is all this weaving of this tapestry of the things that we do. And when I think about that, and this year the theme is the What Is Your Color, and kind of going into the different ways that we have to give. There's four ways of giving: service, in-kind donations, our practice, and finances. What do those mean? What do those mean to us? Okay, service, obviously. You know, for those of us that have been here for a while, for those of you that are new, service, volunteering, getting involved, giving of your time. And we've got so many different ways to do that, and it really helps to make you a part of the center. It's how I started. I actually started, 10, 12 years ago, the first thing I did was greeting. After all of these years and all of the different hats that I've worn and all the different ways that I've tried to give service and volunteer, greeting is probably still one of my favorite things to do. How hard? Stand there and say hi and welcome people. So it's finding ways for you to get involved in the center and take advantage. This is our center. The in-kind donations, that's always helpful to any nonprofit. And there's the children's program has a list. Kadampa Center keeps a list. And there's ways that you can just give stuff. And stuff is always, you know, helpful. So kind of take a peek at that list and see. The practice. So I have a gym membership that I pay for, and I don't ever go. Okay, I'm trying to realign some of my finances and think about the things that are important to me and the things that I'm using. Well, you know what? That one's going to go away. I don't go. I don't practice. Okay? I practice here. So my practice is part of what I think, you know, maybe shows the teachers that what they are offering me is valuable to me because I'm doing it. And it's making such a huge difference in my life. It is making a sincere difference in my life, my practice. And so it is offering that up, whether it's your circumambulations, whether it's your prayers. Let them know, because it's part of what they do. It's respecting them and appreciating them, because what they tell... I'm trying to use myself as an example so you can kind of see. I get a little passionate about this sometimes. But it does make a difference to me, and so it is very important to me. And then the finances, that's, okay, then we get down to the nuts and bolts of things. We need this building. We need this center as a place to come. But Kadampa Center is not this building. Even though we have to pay the mortgage, we have to take care of the lights, we have to do these things, Kadampa Center is really this tapestry of what we make of it. And so it's us getting involved, Kadampa Center, and supporting Kadampa Center so that Kadampa Center is here next week, it's here next year, it's here 10 years from now. This center started over 25 years ago, long before I came. And so all of the people that gave before, they created that foundation and that support that has allowed me to find this place and allowed me to grow. So we just want to carry that forward. All of the programs that are offered here, some of which I'm very involved in, spiritual program, you know, some of these different things, outreach program that I love being a part of. There are also programs that I really don't have anything to do with, but I find them critically important in my way of thinking. You know, the Prison Project and the depth of what those people do when they travel for hours in cars to go and visit and help these prisoners, and that makes a change in their lives. I've met some of these people, and it's amazing what they do. The children's program, I don't have any kids here. Mine are all grown and gone. But thinking about the children's program, I imagine what it would have been like for me to have grown up in the Dharma. That's our future. Even though I have no children here, I find that program critically important because it offers these children a chance to grow up in the Dharma. Most of us here, I would guess, found it, right, later in life. But they get a chance to grow in it, and I just think of what a change that could make to us culturally in our world if we had more people that have actually just had that opportunity to grow up in the Dharma. So I just find all of these things. No, I can't see. See, I get passionate, and then I've got to go back to the script. But this is why I give, okay? It's why I give. It's why I do the things that I do. And I try to give in all of the different ways, all of the different colors. I believe in all of these different things, and I do the best I can when I can. So this is, again, not beating yourself up. There's times that I'm busy with work, and I can't get here all the time. But Knopf Center is always in my heart. And it's critically important that while my life is busy and I've got to go do these other things, I've got to travel and I've got to work, I know it's here for me. I know you all are here for me. And it's really important that I keep that intention in my heart and I keep that connection, you know, all the time. And that's really kind of, I think, an explanation of the why. Now, we have a big goal this year. We've got a goal of the annual appeal. Just this part of it is about $204,000. Now, while that sounds big for a lot of nonprofits, this annual appeal, and that's actually less than 80% of our total budget. There's opportunities throughout the year that you'll have to be able to give financially, and I would really suggest that you maybe look into those opportunities because some of them are when the visiting teachers come and you want to make a connection. So we'll have other opportunities, but right now, we've got this budget. I totally think we can do it. There's so much, so I'm going to ask you to just start looking into your hearts, finding out what's important to you. My gym membership is probably not being as beneficial. I'm looking at all of my things. I'm going to ask you to start looking at your things, too. This is just the kickoff of the annual appeal. You'll start to see more information coming out. We've got a graphic designer that helps us with all of our colors and things. So that I hope you get excited about this. I hope you get intentional about this. And if you have any questions, please ask me, ask Jill, ask any of our board members there's several people here to board. Would you please stand up for me, those of you that are here? If you have any questions about the financial health of the center, what we do with this money, why your money is so important to us, feel free to talk to any of us. I really appreciate your time and enjoy Knopf Center. We have several first-time people here that have coming. We've got some visitors. Welcome. Check it out. If y'all have any more questions, hang around. I'll be here. Thank you all for coming. Thank you for your time, and have a beautiful, beautiful weekend. Oh, we've got gifts. Oh, what color are you? I'm multicolored. Purple is my favorite. Pick a color. What color are you going to be? Thank you, guys. Have an awesome day.
And
another announcement.
Thank you, Sandy. That was beautiful. And now Lori Robbins is here to tell you about one other wonderful project that we have here at the center.
Hi, I am here to tell you today about the Merit Box Project. It is something that I try to do every day because it gives me an opportunity to specifically focus on the practice of generosity. And so I have a little box at home, and every day I go through the little ceremony to really focus in on what I'm doing, and I find it really meaningful because we don't think about generosity in all of our actions every day. And when I spoke with Geshe about it, he had the very simplest practice was to say, oh, ah, hum, and blow on my donation, whether it's a penny or a dollar, and that increases the merit and the value to be whatever the precious beings need in the world. And then I put that offering in. So it's an actual donation, but it's also what I have imagined it to be. And I find that that helps me through my day to be more generous in my time, in my words, in my driving. And so I find it very meaningful. What we do is we practice through the year, and then on Lama Tsongkhapa Day, we bring the donations here, and we turn them into FPMT. FPMT is our, what's the right word for it? Mother organization. So they are kind of like our guidance, but they are separate from us, but they reach out all over the world to help everyone. They do projects for Sangha. They translate texts. They... I saw a project in England where they opened up for a care center for grieving people and how to move through that. So they do all kinds of things. Sangha that don't have a lot of funds to be able to attend teachings, they provide that. Am I missing anything? We get donations from them for the Light of the Path retreat that we do almost every year. And that's coming up in May. Oh, it's not? Sorry. Okay. But anyway, so I wanted to encourage you. We have the boxes. We have two kinds. They're out in the lobby. If you are new to it, you just put it in a special place so that you can take a moment and just put some spare change in and just take that time to focus in on the fact that you are practicing generosity. And then we'll bring it on Lama Tsongkhapa Day and we'll put them all together. And that will be Sunday, December 2nd. So if you're already doing the practice, that is wonderful. Thank you. And if you haven't started, please take a moment to think about doing that. Thank you.